Do you need logos or custom designs for your small business? Then contact Pete from Diamond Graphic Studios today at diamondgraphicstudios@gmail.com. That's Diamond spelt D-Y-M-O-N-D, graphicstudios@gmail.com for your free quote. Diamond Graphic Studios, a proud sponsor of the Brand Podcast and Magazine, available online at thebrandmedia.uk or your favourite podcast player. Hello, once again, to another episode of The Brand Podcast, the podcast by creative-minded people, made for and about creative-minded people. I am Pete Davis, and this is episode 6. And for this 6th episode, I'm going to be speaking to a very special guest on the other side of the Atlantic. And last week, I spoke to somebody at the very beginning of their professional life in the arts. But my guest tonight has been a professional musician for about 2 decades plus. He's been compared to Ronnie Dunn of Brooks and Dunn fame and triple platinum selling Dwight Yoakam, who is the most frequent musical guest on The Tonight Show. His traditional country voice has also been compared to that of an Alan Jackson by the person who created the voice box effects pedal used by Peter Frampton. Now, he's also an entrepreneur with a never give up attitude, and I'm reliably informed the second greatest 8-ball player in the history of Tennessee. Thank you for coming onto the podcast, all the way from Nashville, Mr. Lee Gibson. How are you?
I'm doing well, Pete. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
I might have to take your cohort, Daryl, back on the table and school him on some 8-ball.
Well, he won't be able to see anymore, so hopefully you'll be
the best. If that's what it takes, that's what it takes. I have no shame.
Now, you're joining me tonight. You've got a guitar on your lap, so hopefully at some point we'll hear a song or two, which would be fantastic.
If you'll allow it, I will do it.
No, of course, yeah. So I'm going to take you back to some early years, first of all. And whilst most people tend to find music at some point in their lives, either through the music, I guess, their parents play when they're young or what they discover as they reach their teenage years, some seem to be born into music. And I would say that you seem to fit that mold from what I can see. Born in Nashville? Born in Nashville, taking to emulate some of the greats at a very young age from what I've read. And once your mum bought you a guitar for Christmas, it looks like you were destined, basically, a career in music. Yeah, was that how it felt?
That's concise enough. Yeah, I don't think that works. That definitely fits. I mean, you know, from the time walking around with that very first little plastic guitar, you know, it was not exactly, wasn't quite one of these, I can promise you that. But I remember it had like a white and red string for a guitar strap. And I'd walk around, I'm sure I had like cut marks in my shoulder from wagging that thing around and banging it onto every wall and surface in the living room and kitchen, I'm sure. But yeah. I'd like to say, I wish I could find one of those again. That may be a project for me and eBay.
Yeah, take a look online and see what you can find. Sounds like you were dedicated, though, as you say, with the marks on your neck from the string.
It wasn't a mark from getting beat like in my childhood, like some people would think, or that I might deserve.
So, I mean, during those early school years, again, it looks like you were comfortable on stage. Musicals, plays, church choirs.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously play music yourself and with bands as well.
Oh, yeah.
Did you feel at home on stage?
I always have, except for there was a time in my life after I started going to clubs. Once I turned 21 and I could legally go into bars, I met this fellow named Tim Daly, and he was part of this band called Electric Moo. I mean, killer band, and he was a killer vocalist. Still is a killer vocalist, for that matter. That's the only time I think I've ever been stage, you know, just had stage fright, was getting on a stage with my first real, what I'm going to call a Nashville band. And they're all players. They're all, you know, like you kick butt studio players. So
was that because you felt that they were in a league above you, or was it just, you know, different venues or?
No, I just had not sung in a hot minute, probably. I guess I hadn't really done any singing in probably 3 years. I just kind of took a break and was working all the time and trying to make some money and put that in the bank.
Yeah.
And then I met Tim and the guys, and it kind of took off from there. Granted, I totally butchered. I think it was either Tell Lori I Love Her or another Keith Whitley song, and I forget which one, but I know I absolutely murdered it. It was just, I just left half of it on the stage, and my heart was just like one of them right there. It was not my finest moment, but after that, Tim and I became friends, And he and I would do acoustic shows together where I would show up with my guitar. He'd come in and sing harmony behind me. I'd go to his acoustic shows and I'd sing harmony behind him on a handful of songs and had a blast. And from that point on, you could not take me off stage. So
just finding a comfort level, I guess. And he helped you get that. Yeah.
Once I got past that initial fright of being on stage with a full band, and you know, we had actually years prior to that, probably 3 or 4 years prior to that, I had, this is definitely not country music, but I was part of Middle Tennessee State University's chamber choir. And we performed the Requiem with the Nashville Symphony. So it was one of those things where that's probably the most nervous I'd been until then. But, you know, totally different field, you know, totally different feelings, so forth. Being on stage with Tim and Jimmy Nouse and those incredible musicians. Yeah, I was nervous as a cat pooping a peach seed. So, but like I said, I got over it real quick.
Yeah, well, yeah, thankfully, I guess, yes. Yeah. Again, I can see here that you spent time in college, obviously, playing the gigs all over Tennessee. And then you returned to Nashville, but it looks things in 2001, and it says, mm-hmm. Now a staged veteran.
If you could say that, I mean, we had played a number of shows with bands in around Middle Tennessee, you know, anywhere pretty much in Middle and East Tennessee, Alabama, a little bit of Georgia and so forth, maybe a Kentucky show or two, but... Yeah, that was probably one of those things where I had been on stage a lot. I developed a great bit of comfort with my band and with others. Fall of 2001, spring of 2002, we did a show. It was my first, what I'm going to call my first real show. It was the incredible T. Graham Brown, Crystal Gayle, Mark Colley, and the late, great George Jones.
He was a legend of...
Oh my gosh, the legendary. You know, and yeah. I did my opening act. About 25 minutes, got off stage, and George went right on because he had something else to do that later that evening. I just stood there at side stage and just, you know, how often do you get to open a show for George Jones and then be right there at Monitor World taking in all that country greatness? So, yeah, I figure if I can do that, I can probably do about anything.
When you came back to Nashville?
Yes, sir.
Did you always feel like that's where you would wanted to come back to? You know, obviously you decided you wanted to do music at that point.
Yeah. I mean, Nashville's always home. I mean, I feel very at home in Nashville as much as I do in Winchester, Tennessee. It's kind of like I have two homes and I have split pretty much equal time between the two towns. And now that Nashville is open back up, I plan on spending a lot more time back in the big city. You know, I've already booked writing appointments and some other things in town. So it's like I can get back together with some of my friends, I was talking yesterday and I was like, hey, dude, a buddy of mine, he's in the band Steelwoods, and we've been trying to get together forever. And I was like, I booked a writing appointment and on this day, let's get together for lunch and let's write another one that afternoon. So it's already, I plan on being back in the saddle real quick.
So we're really looking to the future already, you know, you're not hanging around now. No. Well, going back to sort of 2001 and that record deal.
Yeah.
With Garage Band Records, which obviously is short-lived. I guess .com record label from the sound of things.
Yeah, it was the very first online record label. And you had Sir George Martin of the Beatles fame who was a part of it. You had Pete Anderson, who was Dwight Yoakam's producer at the time. I think Brian Eno was part of it. Steve Earle. So there was so much talent and so much music business that had been a part. I mean, that was a part of their advisory board. I thought it was a brilliant idea. It just kind of happened at the wrong time.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a bad thing. I'm still in touch with the guys.
I have to admit, I looked at the time. I didn't think, to be honest with you, about what was happening at that time. But I kind of thought to myself, you know, he signed this massive record deal. You know, you must have been euphoric at the time. And then obviously events of 2001 kind of put a stop to everything, really.
Immediately.
It must have been great to actually sign that deal in the first place. You must have felt like, you know, I've made it. This is me now.
So many people, and I mean incredible people. I mean, there's so many incredible singers in Nashville and Texas and Georgia, Alabama, all over for that matter. But if we're talking about Nashville, there's so much talent in Nashville. It's insane. And I feel very blessed to have just had the attention of that kind of a company who had that much pull individually and as a collective. So I thought if they like me, plenty of other folks will too. So.
Well, it must have given you a great deal of confidence and belief in yourself, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, before I move on, but first of all, I should say that album, of course, was called Somewhere Other Than Here.
Yes, sir.
It is on iTunes. It is on Spotify. It's out there if anybody wants to go out there and listen to it. Some great tracks, very, in my opinion, traditional in many respects.
Oh, yeah.
So the sort of stuff I guess I probably grew up listening to with my mom. She was a huge country fan. But I don't know whether now is the right time maybe to say, do you want to play a little bit of guitar for us?
I could do one, yeah. I'll tell you, I'll do one that was probably got me the deal. In fact, I know it's the one that got me the deal. I'll do a condensed version of it. This little thing called Tennessee Rain. Well, there ain't nothing there's like a Tennessee rain, softer than a kiss, it'll wash away the pain. Hitting you so hard it can drive a man insane. Oh, there ain't nothing there's like a Tennessee, yeah, a Tennessee rain, yeah, yeah. Last night I went down to the Double Deuce. I had to pick her up real late when her shift was through. Then we took a little ride down the Buffalo Bridge with the moonlight shining down there on the ridge. So damn hot, we'd like to burst into flames. The only thing left to save us was the Tennessee rain. Well, there ain't nothing there's like a Tennessee rain, softer than a kiss, it'll wash away the pain. Hitting you so hard it can drive a man insane. Oh, there ain't nothing there's like a Tennessee rain. Well, there's a certain something hanging in the air. Is it the honeysuckle vines or long red hair? And with the good Lord willing, the creek don't rise, we can keep in the truck, it just might stay dry. The wind has rolled up, her hair let down, hearts are beating louder than the thundering sound. Well, there ain't nothing there's like a Tennessee rain, softer than the kiss, it'll wash away the pain. Hitting you so hard it can drive a man insane. Oh, there ain't nothing there's like a Tennessee rain. She pulls me closer as those clouds roll in, and I rise meet one more time. Here comes that warm front, now the sky starts to spin. I don't know where we're going, just where we've been. Well, there ain't nothing there's like a Tennessee rain, softer than a kiss, it'll wash away the pain. Hitting you so hard it can drive a man insane. Oh, there ain't nothing there's like a Tennessee, yeah, Tennessee rain, yeah.
Bravo, bravo. I could see that, like you said at the start, I'm going to do a bit of a condensed version. And you could see there as you went into it, you were like, nah, I'm just going. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to play as much of it as I want to. I don't care. And you could see the joy and the you know, the love on your face there. So, I mean, you must have enjoyed working on that album. Produced by, is it yourself and Art Ward, is it? I think
Art Ward, Art Ward of Century Music Group. He and I have been buddies for, oh gosh, almost as long as, actually longer than Daryl and I have known each other.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
That whole album, if you didn't write all the songs yourself, you know, you worked with two or three other writers and that was it. So your DNA is in that album, obviously.
100%. Yeah. Jay Studdard wrote two or three of them with me, and probably Corey Lee Barker. And I can't remember every, Megan Manley. Yeah, there was a few. Brian Bethard. Yeah. It's like I'm going through and pulling names out.
Yeah.
There's so many. And then I'm trying also to differentiate between writers, between that album, the second album, what we're doing on the third, on the next album. So the filing cabinet doesn't pull out all the way sometimes up here.
No, as you get older, no, it definitely doesn't. Sometimes it gets stuck, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
So in layman's terms, as I said earlier, that kind of first album is a bit more traditional, I guess. A little bit more, I don't want to say old school, but the sort of stuff I guess my mom would listen to that, you know, that I would hear. But then 2001, obviously, brought everything to a halt. And at that time, you know, as I say, from what I could see, you had a tour ready to go. You were going to be touring with Dwight Yoakam.
That's what we were told. We were told that we had 15 dates that were on the books for Dwight, but all of that kind of and again, I never saw contracts, but that's what was told in my ear. You know, we're supposed to be doing 15 shows with Dwight, and I spoke with Pete Anderson on the phone around that time, and I know that there was a couple of things we couldn't make it happen, but I don't regret not being able to do that. But I mean, I would have loved to have had that opportunity to learn from Dwight and Pete and those guys in his band. That would have just been, I mean, that would have been an education you can't get in college.
So. No, of course not. Of course not. But from what I could see, it showed the strength and the personality of you as a person, that you didn't allow that to, because lots of people would have gone, you know what, screw this, you know, it's not meant for me. And you'd have gone back to, you know, whatever you were doing, drinking and just enjoying life and earning some money, you know, as you said beforehand, you know, making ends meet as opposed to trying to make music and just maybe doing that on the side. But the strength of you as a person, you know, you decided that's not going to stop you. Continue to perform, open for major label artists, as you mentioned before, legends like George Jones, Darryl Worley, T. Graham Brown. And then the entrepreneur in you clearly said, you know, what the hell? If I'm going to do this, I may as well do it on my own. And you opened your own production company, Hot Skillet Music.
There's a little more to it than that. I was working for, I had three big clients in Nashville where I was singing all of their background vocals or a great deal of their background vocals, producing vocals on their projects. And I got a little pissed off at my boss one day, my direct boss, and uttered something under my breath to a friend of mine. And it got back to him. I basically said, you know, I should, because he was making me work every Sunday. I never had a Sunday off. And I think I recall the client that we were working with that day. Dude, it was god awful. It was probably some of the worst music I had ever heard. And I had to work it. It was terrible. And I said something about, you know, I should just open my own place and not have to deal with this crap. And the very next day, my boss walked into the studio where I was, pulled me aside, handed me a paycheck that for everything he owed me and fired me on the spot, you know, and I did about sat on my butt for about 5 or 6 days. And I was like, got on the phone with AT&T. I need a business line set up here. You know, bought my URL, bought all, you know, got everything ready to go, business cards ordered. And I had an incredible, now granted, it was a tough first year, but I had a great first year. It was a blast. I was doing my own things, my own projects. Didn't work on much of my own songs. No. I was always working on someone else's. But if I did have a song that I wanted to cut, I would slap it on the back of a session, you know, and pay the guys a little extra. And, you know, y'all stick around for another half an hour or so. And let's knock this out. So it was a lot of fun. I learned tons from some incredible engineers, Eric Jaskowiak, Ron Palmer, Chad. Oh gosh, Chad, I can see your face. I can't think of your last name because it's just like, there's so many guys. And Chad, forgive me. It's been a minute.
Yeah, I'd imagine you've worked with so many different people, though.
It was insane. And, you know, Joe Costa Joe was the guy who actually worked on my engineered a great deal of my first record. And, you know, he worked for Ben Folds. So every time that I got to, you know, I was calling Joe for a session, I was like, hey, you know, let's get together. I can't. I'm working with Ben. It's, you know, so it's like Ben was right there in town. So it was... And he had the big RCA studio. I mean, it was like the cat daddy of all studios in Nashville when it comes to, you know, one of the longest living right there on the row. And incredible. I've had the opportunity to work with some fantastic engineers, musicians. I mean, Opry guys, First Call, you know, the guys who pulled Double Scale, you know, and from Brent Mason to Jeff King to, you know, there's not too many guys in town that I haven't worked with. I would like to work with Vince Gill though. That's still bucket list session player as far as like harmony vocalist on something right there. I would love to work with some Vince Gill. That would be a cherry on top of a lot of session players. So
you mentioned one of the reasons that you kind of annoyed at working there. You know, you said you hadn't had a Sunday off, and from what I can see, again, religion's quite important to you. Would you say that's correct?
I don't attend church on the regular, but I was at the time, and it was one of those things where it's just you get up every day. I had an odd week. It was like I was off on Tuesdays and Fridays, or Tuesdays and Thursdays. It was just, you know, I never had anything to myself. And I figure if I'm going to work for someone, I might as well work for someone who's going to give me the days off I want. And it's me.
And who better than yourself? So,
I know what kind of butthole my boss would be then.
Well, usually the worst boss, to be fair.
Exactly.
Usually the very worst. I mean, the reason I mentioned about the whole religion thing is because the first time I actually heard you was a few years after where we are in this sort of story. It was on the Mailman Survival Guide podcast. And you sang a song, Don't Judge Me, which obviously, you know, you're basically saying only God can judge me, basically, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I thought it was a fantastic song, absolutely beautiful song.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, no, Daryl put me onto that. And it's, as I say, absolutely fantastic song. So
Corey Lee Barker co-wrote that with me. And I still think he called me a couple of years ago after we had that album out. And he was like, you should recut this. He said, you should recut the vocals, drop the one cuss word out of it. I think I forget whatever, you know, anyway, you used to drop that out and let's release it on Christian radio. And it's still kind of hanging back there in the back of the mind to do that. So, because I think it's a great song and it's a great track to do it with.
You mentioned the him saying to recut the song, and the reason, because I've just realized, Still There is actually a song on both albums as well. Was that, was there a reason that you decided to recut that? So it's obviously it's a little bit more cleaner on the second version.
Yeah, it's a whole different thing, because I just felt like the first one was a little not as good as what I thought I could do.
Okay.
Even though people loved it, and so I wanted to recut it, and we shot a video for it, never released the video. We shot like 2 days worth of footage, and I may eventually I still have the footage. I may sprinkle that out and kind of do a retro thing with that, like do all the footage in black and white, and then kind of, I have an idea for it. And if I do it, I'll be sure to send it to you and Daryl.
Great stuff.
So you can say, hey, this guy, you know, this is what Lee was talking about.
So re-recording these songs and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Do you feel there was a big growth in from that first to that second album?
Oh, yeah.
In yourself, yeah.
I mean,
there's definitely a difference in sound, I think.
Yes. I think in what I heard, and there was a lot of the same players on the first album as the second. Yeah. I know I had Doug Greaves, and he plays for Connie Smith on the Opry. He's a fantastic guitar player. He played on both. Art Ward played on the second. I don't think Art played on the first, did he? He may have. I'd have to go through my notes. It's like Dave Francis played bass on the first. Dave Francis played bass on some of the songs on the second, played acoustic on some of the songs on the second. Pat McGrath was definitely on there. And I think the second album, I had either three or four drummers on there. So Chuck Tilley, Noah Hungate, of Dave Hungate, you know, Dave Hungate's son from Toto. I mean, fantastic drummer, man. Fantastic drummer. Great guy too. But and it was a blast. So I think there was a lot of growth between what my ears and mind could do
of course.
The first album and the second one. And I hope that, you know, I've grown more in hopes of this next album too. So we're going to probably actually do like three in a matter of a year and just kind of can them. It'll be in the can and be ready to go.
So you really have been motoring them by the sound of things.
Well, there's one I'm doing that is all, it's going to be all cover songs. But it's all things that, you know, from guys that have been influential to me from Ronnie Dunn, you know, I'm not doing a Ronnie song, but I am going to do a Radney Foster song about some Bobby Pinson. Anthony Smith, and Anthony he's a friend of mine, but he's a fantastic, fantastic writer. I was a fan of his well before I was a friend, I would say. So the guy had a stupendous album come out mid 2001, I believe. And man, it's still one of the, I still think it's probably one of the best albums to come out of Nashville in the past 20 years.
So that second studio album though, didn't seem to come together quickly, did it?
No,
I noticed that people were asking for it in 2007, like almost demanding it from you in 2007. But you clearly, as you've just said yourself, you know, you wanted to make sure everything was right, and you were listening to different things and hearing different parts of the music and growing as a person and as a musician. Are you that much of a perfectionist, or?
I will
tell you, I mean, I did some over the time between the first and the second album. I did some dumb things, you know, nothing illegal, but, you know, I let someone else control my life, basically.
Yeah.
Looking back, I mean, I made plenty of mistakes, but it was a relationship.
Haven't we all?
Yeah, it was a relationship. And she said early on, like, you know, I don't want to date a musician. And I basically got out of music and went back into construction. So needless to say, shortly thereafter, I went right back headlong into music and never slowed down again.
I think now might be a good time for maybe another song from the great Lee Gibson.
I'd be glad to.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Yeah, this is actually, this will be on the next, on the upcoming album.
Something
and
new.
I know we're going to be talking about some shows, some upcoming shows as well. This I wrote with one of the head, he's the head knocker for the Lynchburg Music Fest here in Lynchburg, or over in Lynchburg, Tennessee, where the world famous Jack Daniel's whiskey is made. So Johnny Hill and I wrote this one, and it's a little thing called Space. So let me take the earphones off. Never dreamed of going up on rocket ships. She sent me here. It's a cold, dark place. The day she said she needed space. Well, that's what she wants. Well, that's what she gets. I won't write. Well, I won't call. Well, I won't send a text. Is there someone else? Have I been replaced? Well, I'm going crazy here in space. Space, my final frontier. There's not a thing without her here. Man, I feel like I can't breathe. Space, so far from her. What did I do to deserve being left here aimlessly? Is she gone without a trace? Out here in space. Yeah, we've all been there. Some even make it back from the point of no return. Some just fade to black. All these ins and outs and ups and downs. How much can I take? Or have I been lost in space? Space, my final frontier. There's not a thing without her here. Man, I feel like I can't breathe. Space, so far from her. What did I do to deserve being left here aimlessly? Is she gone without a trace? Out here in space. Space, my final frontier. There's not a thing without her here. Man, I feel like I can't breathe. Space, so far from her. What did I do to deserve being left here aimlessly? Is she gone without a trace? I can't even see her face. Loud here in space.
Bravo again. Fantastic.
There you go. That's off the, it'll be off the next one called Space.
Fantastic. So, world exclusive. Brilliant. So I'm going to move on to, obviously you've done an awful lot of touring over the last 20 years.
A little bit.
Vegas Hard Rock Cafe. You've done the American Legacy Tour. You know, you've opened for so many legends, CMA Fest, you know, where's been your favorite place to perform? You know, smaller venues, a larger venue?
Well, the favorite show, I mean, to this day is still me opening up for George Jones, or, you know, being on that show with George. That's going to be a memory for me forever. Long as, you know, long as the brain works, I'll have that memory. But, you know, having worked with Randy Houser was a big one, you know, but I get to not only get to, you know, open up and do shows, but I do some production work as well. And I've had the pleasure of opening up for and also mixing T. Graham Brown's band. And I mean, that man can sing the phone book, and he is on. I don't hear him miss a note. You know, it's incredible. So when I get to work with guys like that or gals like that, it doesn't matter. That's priceless. So yeah, there's not a favorite venue I've been to yet. And
yeah,
I know that we're on Lynchburg Music Fest again this year, which is in July. So I can't wait for that. That's a big outdoor stage. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know you've done that for the last 2 or 3 years, haven't you, I think?
Exactly. I called my buddy Johnny back in February or March. It may have even been at the end of deer season. I forget. I know where I was, but I was talking to my contact there, and I'd called him. I was like, you know, give me a shout back. Let's get together and do some writing. He calls me back, you know, and he said, by the way, I want to let you know, we'd love to have you on the show this year. I said, I'm not calling you to book a show. I said, I'm calling you to write a song. I'm not going to turn down the money. I said, but I would be fine writing songs with you again. So let's do this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, I know that they have Cody Johnson on the show on Saturday night and Hardy on Friday. And I'm supposed to be, I have a verbal on that Friday. So I'm thrilled to be on either one, but I did go ahead and book a Saturday night show in Georgia. So we're traveling down, we're doing this one, and then hopping down to almost Columbus, Georgia, down to Meriwether County for a show. So it's a bit of a drive,
yeah.
But I think it's about a five hour haul after Lynchburg. So, but it'll be a lot of fun. I've got family and tons of friends down there.
You guys all, you know, in the States talk about a 5 hour drive as if it's the norm, and for us that's literally traveling from one side of the country to the other. So, you know, it's odd, I guess, for us, but
I know
for you guys, it's just like, you know, it's everywhere's a 5 hour drive or a 10 hour drive.
Well, yeah, there was a couple of years ago, I did a one off, I think it was either 18 or 19. I did a one off in Delaware, and it was on Easter weekend. I drove up and I did this one show and drove right back. It's a 12 hour drive one way.
Oh, Christ.
So exactly.
Yeah, I can imagine.
From my front door to the venue was a 12-hour haul, and I happen to have some friends in town who's like, where are you going after this? Like, I'm gonna grab a hotel. Like, why don't you just stay with us? Why don't you twist my arm again? You know, save myself $200 on a hotel room. Heck yeah, I'll do that all day long.
I guess it's good to have that sort of network of people, which it definitely seems like you've had. You know, there's so many people you can't even remember them all. So it's definitely good to have that network of friends and colleagues within the industry. But obviously, as 2020, and I don't want to linger too much on 2020, because hopefully now we're moving out of that now. But during 2020, you did quite a few online concerts. However, I look back and you were doing them back in 2015. So you were, you know, you were doing this way back when, you know, when there was no pandemic, you know, leading the way.
I was trying.
Yeah.
I was trying to do them then. I would do it on stage it. And I didn't know what I was doing, and I'm still learning. But this year it was, I just finished my taxes the other day. So I know, I was actually very blessed as to what was earned through online concerts. And, I was quite pleased, you know, there was not, it's not bad. It was one of those things where it was enough to, it paid for, I've got a Sony A6500 that I stream with, and that paid for itself right there. So I had a couple of those, and I bought them and reinvested it, you know, and got a good camera, a couple of good lenses and so forth. And the Elgato, HD 60, or something like that. You know, I had a friend of mine who helped me put together everything I really should have. I went from having a Logitech C930E to a Sony APS sensor. And it's like, it was night and day for, you know, for what I was broadcasting. I was like, I'm all about that. Yeah. I was loving it.
I guess, you know, as things do open up, obviously you can't wait to get back on stage.
Yes.
But I take it you're still going to do a little bit of online stuff.
Yeah.
A bit less traveling, maybe.
It's less traveling, but it's also, it's a good way to catch up with folks from the West Coast because I can't travel out. I mean, California is supposed to be open after June the 15th. I was speaking to a friend of mine in New York. He's an agent. He handles a lot of some nice venues up there as well, which we had to cancel in 2020. Yeah. You know, we had booked them early that year and they were shows all the way into, I think it was November. I hung on to him for 2 months and he finally called. He's like, dude, the governor here has locked everything down. We're not doing anything for a while. So let's just, you know, pull the plug on that. But I will continue to do some online things for people in New York and on the West Coast because it's easier.
You can potentially reach other people in other countries as well, you know, hopefully expand your own brand and not just, you know, not just, as you say, the States as well.
True. It's, and I would love to come to, the UK, love to come to England and, you know, to do C2C. I think it's country to country is what they call it, but C2C is the, and that's a goal. I mean, my passport is ready to go and I've got a guitar. Have guitar, have passport, will travel. I can promise
Difficult
you that.
Difficult to know at the moment whether they'll let you in or anything at the moment in this country. So I know. God knows what they're doing.
I get that.
But
and I have several friends, you know, over there that, you know, that they've been very supportive of me in the music. Yeah. They're tied in with different publications and so forth. And they've been great to me. So anytime that if I were to come there, I would have folks there. I know I would. So,
but obviously going forward, you can't wait to get back on stage, as you say, and you've got an awful lot booked. I noticed that, I mean, you've got 3 or 4 shows booked this week, which is, for anybody listening, is coming up to the end of May, which incidentally is Lee's birthday at the end of May. So if anybody wants to send him a present and a birthday card, they can do. and obviously into the coming months as well, you know, I guess you just cannot wait to get going again.
It was one of those things where about a month ago, I got on the phone, we could see daylight.
Yeah.
You know, we could see some daylight. And I did one, an acoustic show with a friend of mine. He called me, it was his band had canceled. He's like, will you back me up? I'm like, yeah, I owe you a favor. I'll do that. So off we go. We do this little thing next, you know, in the next county over, had a good time, made a little money. And I went back shortly thereafter and did an acoustic set just with me, a solo thing. And it was, instead of doing like a long night, you know, we did like two separate shows. I did like a 6 o'clock and I did an 8 o'clock and we cleared the room between them and we packed the thing out. It was great. Had a big time. I think the venue enjoyed it. I would imagine they made money from food, drinks, and so
I think
forth,
people are desperate to get back out there.
Oh yeah. And we've got things going into October.
Well, during these hard times, you know, music and the arts have been so important to people. And I think people just are desperate to get back out there and have a few drinks and dance, basically. And, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So going on to your charity work, it seems to be something you've, over the years, you've done a few benefit gigs. It looks like cancer charities, breast cancer especially. But you've also been a big advocate of, is it a local veterinarians or something? Animal Harbor and Wolfstock, which is
Animal Harbor. It's actually a no-kill. It's a no-kill shelter that is here in Franklin County. And I've done 3 or 4 shows for them and we've raised some good money. You know, granted this past year, we thought we were going to, we thought we'd be out of the woods by this time. You
of course.
Know? This would be blown over, but we still had a good number of people show up to the show. It was outdoors. So, you know, like if you want to be undercover, we've got a gorgeous venue. You'll be undercover. If you want to be out and socially distanced, be out. And, you know, there was fire pits and people could bring their lawn chairs. It was a gorgeous venue here in Tennessee called the Honeysuckle. Beautiful place, beautiful place. And we'll probably do that again this year. We don't have a date, but we are working either on a Friday or a Sunday for one of those. So, but I've been involved with them for a little bit, and I hope I can do more and do something bigger this year. I know the Twin Creeks folks have asked me about it. The owners, in fact, have asked me about it, and I've spoke with Animal Harbor as well. They're ready to go. I know. Mm-hmm. So I hope we can do something big.
Definitely. Well, it'll
be a lot of fun.
We've got three dogs ourselves, and I know that they're brilliant for your mental health. And, you know, with this last year, lots of people, their animals have helped them through it. And I think, charities, et cetera. So the future for Lee Gibson.
Yeah.
You mentioned, is it three albums in the next 2 to 3 years, you said?
I would like to do one album of things that I write or co-write. I want to do an album of covers. Yep. And there's an album. I want to do a Western, like a cowboy theme kind of thing. Okay. Because I've grew up in the country, but therefore in my early 20s, I would do a lot of team roping. And I have an incredible amount of respect for the cowboys and cowgirls who go out there and farmers and ranchers. So I would like to do something kind of steeped in the true Western culture. So yeah. We've already got one cut. We've got a few songs recorded. It just haven't gone in to cut the vocals on it. So as soon as I can get into the right studio, you know, I plan on doing it.
Brilliant. So the future looks bright for yourself then.
Well, it looks brighter than it did in 2020. I can tell you that.
I can see you look like you're gearing up front of the song there.
I was thinking about it. I'm not sure if I could pull this one or not. It's out of my range a little bit right now. I've got a little bit of a tickle in my throat. You know, I don't have COVID. I don't have COVID-19, but after not being in a gym as much as I wanted to be, I probably have the COVID-15.
You're preaching to the choir there. I've had a terrible cough and chest problem for about 18 months. It predates COVID, funnily enough, and it hasn't helped, like you say, with no gyms. So,
I would love to do one more. This will be off the cover album if I can do it.
Go ahead.
A number of years ago, I'll give you a little bit of a backstory. I was telling you earlier about that band who from North Dakota. I went up and they called me and they're like, you know, hey, listen, we've got this show at a casino. We're opening up for Dan Seals. I was like, oh, Dan Seals is the man, you know. So I get the call. They agree to hire me. Snowstorm cancels all flights and closes a lot of roads that I would have crossed. So it's like they put me off a week and I missed opening up for Dan Seals by a mere 3 days.
Oh.
So, but this is a Dan Seals song and it will be on one of the next records.
Excellent.
So let me drop these earphones.
No problem.
And see if I can get through it. Saw your picture on a poster in a cafe out in Phoenix. Guess you're still the sweetheart of the rodeo. As for me and little Casey, we still made the circuit in a one-horse trailer and a mobile home. She still asks about you all the time. I guess we never even crossed your mind. But oh, sometimes I think about you and the way you used to ride out in the rhinestones and the sequins. With the sunlight on your hair, and all the crowd will always love you. As for me, I've come to know everything that glitters is not gold. Well, old Red, he's getting older, and last Saturday he stumbled, but you know, I just can't bear to see him go. Little Casey, she's still growing, and she started asking questions. But there's certain things a man just doesn't know. Her birthday came, you never even called. I guess we never crossed your mind at all. But oh, sometimes I think about you And the way you used to write out in the rhinestones and the sequins, with the sunlight on your hair, and all the crowd will always love you. As for me, I've come to know everything that glitters is not gold. Everybody said you'd make it big someday, but I guess we were only in your way. Well, someday I'm sure you're gonna know the cost. Cause for everything you win, there's something lost. But oh, sometimes I think about you and the way you used to ride out in the rhinestones and the sequins, with the sunlight on your hair, and all the crowd will always love you. As for me, I've come to know everything that glitters is not gold. Everything that glitters is not gold.
Absolutely fantastic.
Little Dan Seals for you. So that's in, and that should be on one of the next records.
Absolutely fantastic. I've got to be honest with you.
Thank you.
I envy anybody who can play guitar, obviously. And there's obviously someone who can play guitar as well as you. And I'm sat there watching your fingers. And I used to do a bit of singing in my younger days. And I mean, you talk about your voices, you know, a bit rusty and all the rest of it. But, you know, it sounded great to me. And I'm envious.
Thank you.
My missus actually bought me a guitar a couple of years ago in the hope that I would start playing again. And just never have time, but absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So I'm genuinely jealous and envious of you. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, I lead a blessed life. I know that. I'm going to lie. I mean, there are things that could have been better. That still can be. So we're working towards that. It's a crazy thing. 2020 was, I was poised to have the biggest year of my life in 2020. And something that I don't think Daryl knows, and I don't publicize this, that it's not only do I perform and produce, having owned so much equipment over the years, I purchased and still do a lot of wireless equipment. So I have another stream of income that I do rentals for churches, school plays, theaters. Anything like that, when they need wireless, I mean, I send them out with some of the best wireless you can get your hands on, and I'm in the black on all of it. I don't owe anyone. It's paid for itself, and I have enough now where I can actually, I tell you, last year, when COVID canceled everything here, right before that, I had either 5 or 6 weeks fully booked every week, bam, 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 one right after the other, and then that hit, and it's like, I watched thousands of dollars not come in, you know, just on rentals alone, because you know, in March, you could do shows, you're doing theaters, you're doing clubs and so forth, but still kind of cold outside. February and March is still cold. So you're not doing any outdoor shows.
Yeah.
So I don't say I was relying, but you know, people said, yeah, we want that. So it's already starting to pick back up. I had one rental last year and I think it was right there at the February, I just happened to look at the tax on the invoice for my taxes the other day. I had one rental in 2020 and I was thrilled to have that one, looking back on it. But I've already had one this year and it's picking up. I'll have more. So between me doing this right here and renting things out, it's, you know, there are multiple streams of income. So I think you have to do that.
Yeah. You cannot pigeonhole yourself anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
Got to open yourself up to, like,
I did that in 2001.
Yeah.
I did that in 2001 with, you know, when I had the record deal, you know, and I watched months of shows vanish. In fact, the first month of show, like September and October, was done. I know that with flights canceled and so forth, everything was done for a while. We watched several shows just fall off the books, and there's nothing you could do about it. I mean, I was on the verge of bankruptcy. I lost that much money, and I had that little to show for it, you know, after, because there was nothing I was doing. I wasn't working a second job. I wasn't in construction. I was 100% music, and I had all of that, you know. My savings did not last me nearly as much as that's what they should have.
Yeah. But older and wiser now, and you're making better decisions. Yeah.
A little bit. I'm trying. I'm trying. So there's a little bit of that going on.
Lee, it has been an absolute honor and a privilege to speak to you tonight. Where can we find Lee Gibson online?
You're right there on it. LeeGibsonMusic.com is the, I mean, everything is there, from the music to the schedule for upcoming shows to anything. And we've tied in social media with that. So even if you don't, you know, hang out on the website for long, definitely hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, you know, Twitter, with a follow. I would appreciate it. You know, pick up a CD. We ship overseas, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
We do. We will ship anything over. In fact, I just did this show the other day. There was a guy, and one of his buddies, they were down from New York, but he said, "Man, I want one of your hats." And we had sold we'd had a record night. He's like, "I want one of those hats, but we don't have it." I don't have any of the hats. I said, "I've got some at the house, but we never sell this many." I said, "I'll tell you what you do. Buy what you want, and I will ship them to you." So he's like, "You'll actually ship them?" Yeah. You know, if I don't ship them to you, cancel the card, whatever. Cancel the account. It'll ding me, I promise you. So we set it up, swiped it, and I shipped them out the next morning. You know, I went home, packaged them puppies up, and off they went. And he's from Scotland.
He's from Scotland, is he? Because I did notice, actually.
He's from Scotland.
You just mentioned the hats. I noticed that there's been a few T-shirts and hats and stuff over the year. The merchandise is certainly growing.
It is. And we're learning what not to do, but we're learning what to do. But so if you're going to be on social media, if you're going to, you know, find us there, LeeGibsonMusic.com, we're very easy to find. And all of the links to the social media accounts are on the right there under the header.
Yep.
So it's easy to get to. Yeah, we'd love to have the more the merrier.
Definitely, definitely. Well, once again, thank you. Honestly, it genuinely has been fantastic tonight. Thank you so much, Lee. Thank you.
Pete, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate you and Daryl. Y'all have a great evening over there, man. You take care.
You too. Thank you. Cheers.